IVM.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Sponge Podcast, Leadership Lessons I Learned from My Clients with Ambi Parmeshwaran. Today, we're going to be discussing Chapter 26, Value Quality Over Cost. Hi, Ambi. How's it going?
Good. Thank you. And happy to be back.
I am glad to have you back. This is going to be a fun chapter to talk about. I think the story in this chapter is probably one of the more... I don't know what the word is. It's not shocking precisely, but it was a story like, oh, wait, what, that happened? Like, that's how I reacted to it.
Yeah. This really happened. Yeah. And, you know, intentionally, it's a very good story. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I kind of kept it near the end of the book.
Right,
because
right.
You kind of bookended, you know.
So let's dive right into it. It's a story about Azim Premji and...
Yeah, Vikram, so it's a story about Azim Premji, you know, the founder of whatever, you know, he built the Wipro, Wipro business. Just to give a little bit of background to people who don't know, Azim Premji is really today more known as India's biggest philanthropist,
yes,
right?
Yes, he is.
So to give an idea, in the year 2000, he had a wealth of $30 billion.
Right. Yeah.
$30 billion is how many thousand crores?
30 is 12,000 multiplied by 10. So 1,20,000 crores.
Okay. So, some number like that. Okay.
Actually, that's not even correct anymore.
Yeah. So it's...
I'm doing multiplied by 4. I've got to multiply by 7.
You have to multiply by 7.
Yeah. So that's 7.
$1 billion is 7,000 crores.
So 30 billion would be
210,000.
210,000.
Yeah, 210,000 crores. So that's a wealth. But
come
2019, his wealth is down to 5 billion.
Okay.
Right? And he's given away close to 24 billion or something like that to charity.
Yeah, impressive.
You know? Yeah. And in 31st of July this year, 2019, he's going to be stepping down from chairmanship of Wipro, and his son Rishad Premji is going to be taking over. Right, so Premji, in a sense, created a new definition of to being wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I was fortunate that, you know, got to work on some of his brands for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So this is a story going back to the time when Wipro had created a new logo.
Right.
Which was internally called the Rainbow Flower, right? Designer, Shobhit Sen Gupta, had designed the logo, and they had done a lot of research on crafting the logo and the baseline, which is applying thought.
Right.
And so Mr. Premji and his team, Vineet Agarwal was piloting it. He was then the marketing head of Wipro Consumer Care. So they wanted us to create a campaign to announce the new logo, the new ethos of the company. It's about applying thought. So they'd come to Bombay to our office to look at the campaign. I think the first round presentation, I don't think we had anything great to show. It didn't work too well. So Mr. Premji said he'll come back after 10 days. So he came back after 10 days. And then we presented a set of ads, which he liked.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some changes to be made. So he said, look, can you make these changes and, you know, come and show it to me next week in Bangalore? I said, yeah, I'll come to Bangalore and I'll show it to you. For some strange reason, there was something happened and I could not go to Bangalore. So I called his office a few days before my scheduled meeting with him saying, look, I can't come for reason. And so can I come a few days later?
Right.
But his office checked with Mr. Premji. Mr. Premji said, no need for... Ambi to come, and you know, he can send one of his senior colleagues, and you know, I don't think I'll need too much time.
Right.
So I caught hold of Santosh Menon, my account director on the account, and I told him, you know, take these, you know, 4 ads and go to Bangalore and show it to Mr. Premji and come back. So he said, yeah, great. So so he went to Bangalore. I think the meeting was on a Friday, and the meeting was at 5:30 in the evening. And
okay.
And Mr. Premji, 5:30 means 5:30. So the meeting started at 5:30, ended around 6:30.
Okay.
Things were cleared. And at which stage Mr. Premji asked Santosh, Santosh, which flight are you taking back to Bombay? So Santosh said, sir, you know, I'm leaving tomorrow.
Okay.
So Mr. Premji said, why do you want to stay the night here? You know, it's only 6:30. There's a 9 o'clock flight and there's a 9:30 flight. you know, do you want me to book the ticket for you? I mean, you, why don't you go home, you know? So, Santosh was in a bit of a jam because he had planned a night of pub crawling in Bangalore, and he didn't want to say all that to Mr. Premji. So he said, sir, I'll manage, and then he ran out of the room. And the next Monday, he was there in my office, and he was all excited. He said, yeah. And he said, Ambi, you know, Mr. Premji asked, which flight are you taking? Arey, main to gir gaya. I said, kya hua, kyun gira? Arey, nahi, he was asking which flight. And I, you know, I was spending the night, next day morning. So he was asking me, go. You know, there is enough flights. I can book you a ticket right now. Go. So, boss, main to dar gaya. So I said, yaar, darne ka kya baat hai? You know, you escaped. No, he said, no, I escaped. But I didn't want to tell him that I'm meeting some friends and, you know, going around Bangalore in the night. So I said, good, you came back. So, theek hai, ho gaya. So this kind of stayed with me, you know, saying, look, why did Mr. Premji ask Santosh this question?
Yeah.
That which flight are you taking? Right? And there must be some, you know, kind of reason for this, right? And it kind of dawned on me some years later that I heard that Walmart has these guidelines for their vendors. So they are based in Bentonville and Arkansas, and all kinds of companies fly down to Bentonville to meet with them and negotiate with them.
Right.
And their rule is clear. So you come in the morning, meet us, and you leave the night. The understanding is that if you're going to spend the night in Bentonville, you're going to book a room and you're going to spend $100, $200 on the room.
Right.
You're going to have, you know, a few drinks, you're going to have dinner, and the next day morning you're going to hire a cab. So all this totals up to $300, right?
And in some way, shape or form is going to come to Walmart at some
exactly. point. That $300 is going to be billed to Walmart, and Walmart will therefore have to price their toilet tissues 1 cent more.
Right.
And the Walmart customer is going to crib that much more, right? Yeah. So they're very clear. So you don't. So I said, look, probably this is what Mr. Premji was talking about, right? So you know, you need to, if you're trying to control costs in your company, every small bit matters.
Yes, I do.
And I think that's a lesson we learned dealing with Mr. Premji. So I kind of adopted that system, and I still do, that as far as possible, you take the morning flight out and you get back the night, even if it is 10, 11, 12, get back the night to Bombay, in my case. As a company, we also had a policy that we don't fly business.
Right.
To try and fly economy domestically, definitely everywhere. And this kind of seeped into the culture of the company. Mm-hmm. As a result, sometimes it used to be quite ridiculous that, you know, that as a CEO of our agency, I'll be flying economy and someone who's, say, a senior VP in another agency is flying business.
Right.
And they say, "Aris, boss, aap," I said, "Nahin, boss, main toh, mera jagah piche hi hai, main wohi chalega hamara." So maybe we used to carry it a bit too far, but, you know, working with, you know.
But I think domestically makes sense, right? I mean, like, one of the common things that I've heard from a lot of corporates in terms of what their this is, that any domestic flight or any flight which is less than 5 hours is economy. Any flight which is over 5 hours, where sleeping is a real concern, where you actually need to get some sleep, there they'll cover business.
Yeah, so I think, you know, our parent company had a four-hour rule. So anything less than 4 hours, you don't fly business.
Right.
Anything more than 4 hours, you know, you can fly business. But we, at least domestically, we never used to.
I don't think we should. We don't have a four-hour domestic flight, do we? I don't think we do.
If you fly from Ahmedabad to Guwahati, through a hopping flight,
that it might take, get 4 hours.
But we, you know, so we absorbed that. And I think that was a key learning working with people like Premji, that, you know, you need, cost is something important. And if you control costs, and controlling the cost, actually, the other important lesson is cost control has to come from the top.
Yes, it does.
Right. So it cannot be something which is just given lip service, but the senior most person in the company has to say, look, is there any leakage happening?
Yeah.
And Mr., you know, the lesson was that Mr. Premji was looking at every little thing like this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, we implemented in our company, and I don't know whether it saved us 5% or 10%, but even if it saved us, say, 2%,
it's worth it.
You know, in an industry where the margin is very low, 2% saving is a big saving.
It's a big saving. But I mean, you mentioned later that you wonder about, like, you know, does this get to the point of counterproductiveness? I think that there might be a point at which it gets there, but it's not there in this kind of thing, right?
Yeah. So, you know, you need to be, and I've written about it, you know, you need to be clear where do you need to economize, mm-hmm. where do you don't need to economize. Mm-hmm. For example, when it comes to safety of your employees, yeah. that is something you cannot economize.
You should not.
So while you may tell anyone to take an auto rickshaw and go home or take the local taxi and go home, but, you know, if there are girls working late,
yeah.
you say, sorry, you know, we'll have a tourist taxi service yeah. where you know the name of the driver, you know the number of the driver. Only you can only use those drivers, can only use that taxi service, though it's going to cost the company maybe twice the amount of yeah. money, but you cannot risk the, you know, safety of your employees.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are a couple of other places. That's not the only place. I think that's an important place. Another place where I think that, I have conversations with my friends constantly about business and overheads and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
One of the places which I think that a lot of people try and economize, which they shouldn't, is tea and coffee.
Really?
Yeah. I like, there are people who have this rule that in the office, one cup of tea at 10:30 in the morning, one cup of tea at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and that is it.
And then vada pav at 6:30.
But that strikes me as unnecessary economizing, right?
True.
Because, you know, I mean, like, at the end of it, if a sip of tea is going to give somebody a jolt so that they can wake themselves up and kind of do better, then isn't that worth it?
Yeah, I think these are some of the things which are probably part of the, the industrial era.
Mm-hmm.
That, you used to give a coffee and a tea break to your workers. Yeah. And therefore, you restricted it to two, because when they take a coffee break, they take a coffee break. They yeah. get off their work. They sit in the canteen, chat for half an hour, and the bell rings and they go back to work.
Right.
Now, this two teas a day is a part of that industrial era.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, which is stupid today, because people are anyway drinking tea and coffee on their desk and they're working.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So, which is why I think company like Google cracks it, right? They say that there is some food 100 meters from your table.
No matter where you are.
Whichever part of the Google campus you are in.
So I buy that. I believe in that. But again, like, let's not give Google like too much happy thoughts for this. Because a big part of the reason why Google pays for all these facilities for employees, there's all kinds of stuff, right? It's food, it's daycare, it's laundry.
Yeah, dog
services.
Yeah.
So this is all abroad, not so much in India. India is a little more restrictive in terms of what they allow. But all of this they do is with the idea that they want you to live at office.
Absolutely. They don't pay overtime, yeah. right? So you keep working.
They want you to come to office in the morning. They want you to stay all day. Yeah, they want your life to revolve around office.
Yeah, they'll do your laundry for you and they'll wipe your butt for you.
Which I think is
as long as you sit and keep coding the whole day and night, right?
I kind of do admire some of that, right? I think some of that makes sense, right? I think I don't know. I think a laundry service might be going a step too far. But I think the idea that there is a canteen for staff, which is always open, which anybody can always get something to eat at, or coffee at, or tea at, or soft drinks, or cold drinks, or water. I think stuff like that, I think, just is kind of, it feels like low-hanging fruit to kind of keep a company more productive.
No, I think that's very true. So you need to, therefore, figure out what is it that you're controlling as cost. How is it going to affect the morale of the company? How is it going to affect the performance of the company?
Yeah.
And I think some of these things we learned from Mr. Premji was very valuable for us.
So, you know, maybe let's go back a little bit to the chapter itself. There was a part of the chapter where you were mentioning a article in the Economic Times, 7 Lessons from Frugal Habits of the Rich. Maybe we can talk a little bit about those. I think those could be interesting points of discussion.
Yeah, you know, interesting thing is that the rich are always painted with the same kind of a brush, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, they live these larger-than-life, life. They live in palaces and they blow up money and they have, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So in this article, what was interesting was that, you know, the article talked about the frugal habits of the hyper-rich, you know, even though they may be very, very wealthy, mm-hmm. you know, multi-billion dollars, etc. But some of these guys, like, they talked of, you know, Warren Buffett, right. Bill Gates, and Azim Premji,
mm-hmm.
had really frugal habits. You know, they For many, many years, Mr. Premji used to drive around in a Ford Escort.
Yes, famously.
Yeah. And Warren Buffett till date, he could have a 6-course meal every day, but he has a Coke and a McDonald's for lunch.
Okay.
And he lives a very simple life. Right. So the point which I think the article was making was these so-called hyper-rich people are actually pretty frugal in their own personal lifestyle.
Yep.
And some of them, in fact, carry it into their workplace. And I think whether it is, you know, Warren Buffett or Azim Premji, they managed to take this frugal lifestyle, frugality into the organization to drive it into the culture saying, look, we need to control cost at every level.
Right.
And if you control cost at every level, everyone will end up being wealthy.
Yeah, of course.
Right? And it's an interesting, you know, contrast, right? You controlling cost at every level, but then, you know, everyone in the company does well, and the company does well, and then therefore you end up actually becoming wealthy.
Right. I think it's interesting as well, right? I mean, like, I remember somewhat of a facetious joke, if you will, right? Somebody was making a joke about, so Shah Rukh Khan was on, like, the cover of some newspaper or the other, and he was talking about the cost of, like, a pack of bread or something like that. He was doing an ad for something, a Good Day ad or something, which was, like, saying the price of it. And so I was with a couple of friends, and one of them was like, what does Shah Rukh Khan care about the price of this? He's got hundreds of crores. And then the other friend who was with me was like, that's how you keep hundreds of crores, right? By knowing the price of a cost of biscuits.
Correct. So, you know, this article talks about how, you know, the 7 habits are they live below their means, they spend less on clothes, shoes and food, they save and invest first and spend later, they don't carry much cash, use credit card wisely, they look for discounts, coupons and other ways to cut cost. They value quality over cost.
Which I think is non-intuitive, but actually a really interesting piece, right?
Yeah.
The idea that you'd rather spend... I do believe in this as well, right? I mean, like, I used to buy cheapo shoes, and now I buy slightly more expensive shoes, but at least they're higher quality.
Okay. Have you gone to the handmade Italian shoes as yet?
No, I have not. I just went to an America trip, right? So I got 4 pairs of shoes on my way back. I finally got my size.
Now, interestingly, this article also talks about the 7th lesson, which I totally disagreed with, which is that they give lesser percentage of their income to charity.
I think that is...
That was wrong.
I don't know if that's a lesson is the right word for that, but I also don't know that that is necessarily true, right? The billionaire's pledge is a real thing now.
And I think Warren Buffett, Azim Premji and Bill Gates are kind of driving it. Right?
There's so many others who have committed to it. Larry Ellison, who nobody would have ever thought would have, but he's committed to it. I mean, there's so many people who have committed to it. So, I mean, like, I don't know that. And also, I mean, like, you know, there is a new concept of effective giving, right? Which is something that people have been looking at in the last few years, that basically how do we give to charity in a way which produces outsized returns? And there's a lot of work that's being done behind that as well, right? And again, Bill Gates is probably one of the preeminent people behind that kind of thing. But again, I think that is also something that you're seeing a lot of. So I don't agree with the idea that rich people give a lot less to charity.
So I don't agree with that point, which is the 7th point in that article. But I think the other 6 were right. And focusing on, you know, value over cost.
Yeah.
And then cost. I mean, cost is not something which you just talk about in your shareholder meetings, but you actually live.
And you have to make sure that you're doing it as well as you can.
Correct. Right? Yeah. And you have to control cost with a heart, so to speak.
Yeah, right? Absolutely true. Great. I think that's a good line to end on. So let's end this chapter right here, and we'll be back next week with the self-driven driver.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks. See you next week.